And welcome back. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. I'm Steve Kraske, the man credited with making the Flint Hills what they are. Instead of just a stretch of land to drive past, is selling more than 10,000 acres of pristine Flint Hills ranch land. The asking price for both totals tens of millions. But all this comes with a giant caveat, and that is Bill Haugh has placed the two ranches on perpetual conservation easements through the Nature Conservancy. The idea is that 1,000 years from now, the land will look the same as it does today. Now, Bill Haugh is setting his sights on further development of the West Bottoms around Kemper Arena. Bill Haugh joins us now. Bill, it's nice to have you. Good morning.
Steve, nice to talk to you.
That you're selling this land, Bill, was announced in early February. Have you sold it yet?
No, we still have 14,000 acres, more or less. All of which straddles I-35 between Emporia and Cassidy. And in January of last year, I sold a 3,300-acre ranch called the Crocker Springs that's just south of Cottonwood Falls. So we have potential buyers. Obviously, there's always a difference between the asking price and the seller's willingness to pay, so I'm confident we'll get it done soon. Hate to do it after 30 years, but it's time for me to do it.
I was going to say, just so our listeners know, and you've just pointed this out, Bill, that the land you're selling does straddle I-35 by the Bazaar cattle pens. That's a people might recognize that site on I-35. How tough is it for you to walk away from all this?
You know, I've spent the last 40 years or so in various careers, and it's always a little tough to move from one thing to the next, but I love what I'm doing in the Stockyards District here in the development, and for the first time in 30 years, I don't own any cattle, and it's time to move on to something different.
You're pretty unsentimental about it, Bill.
Oh, I'm probably unrealistically not sentimental.
How are you ensuring? What's that?
It's a beautiful place. I've got a wonderful home there, and I will miss it.
Are you keeping any of the land for yourself or for when you want to get out of the city?
That all depends. I've got a beautiful home on a 90-acre lake on my main ranch. Wonderful bass fishing and fun. And so if a potential buyer for that ranch wants the house, I will sell it to them. And if not, I'll just continue to own the home and access to the lake.
How are you ensuring that this land is going to remain unspoiled for generations to come? Bill, what did you put in place here?
I'm working with the Nature Conservancy of Kansas, and we've placed a conservation easement, which is for eternity, to ensure that it will never change. No additional buildings will be built on it, and nothing will change in the viewshed at all. As you pointed out earlier, I'm very fortunate that the only access and overlook to off of I-35 to the Flint Hills is on my property. And, gosh, Interstate Highway people did a beautiful job of developing the overlook there.
You know, it's a unique thing about the Flint Hills because you can't look at that land in small pieces. You've got to be able to see it for as far as you can see. That's the key here, right, Bill?
And, you know, I'm very happy to be able to say I've got probably 14 miles of frontage on I-35, counting both sides of the road. That as far as you can see will always look the same forevermore.
Does it bother you at all that the interstate bisects your land?
No, I really kind of like it. it's I like that other people, and there are always people on the overlook that are taking pictures of each other with the Flint Hills in the background. And as I'm down to my house, which is a few miles away from the turnpike, I can occasionally see the traffic going by in the far distance, and it's sort of a peaceful, nice thing to be able to observe.
Because you can't hear it, right? It's something that's pretty far off.
No, you really can't hear the interstate at all.
Yeah. I'm visiting with Bill Haugh about his decision to sell his land in the Flint Hills. Early in your career, Bill, you were looking for some land to buy when you came across some work that K-State was doing on something called intensive grazing. What is intensive grazing, and why did that interest you so much?
You know, it's early intensive grazing, and it essentially it replicates what the bison did, you know, for thousands and thousands of years as they came up from more southern locations in the spring about April 15th and probably moved on north by July 15th. At the time I was initially buying the land, it was primarily owned by multi-generational landowners who didn't want to be in the cattle business and leased the land to others in relatively small portions. I had been president of a agricultural company for several years, had had some financial success, and was looking to buy ranch land somewhere in the Dakotas or western Kansas or Panhandle of Texas, none of which had adequate rainfall.
Mm-hmm.
When I became aware of the Flint Hills, it was almost miraculous that by duplicating the early intensive grazing thing that K-State had developed, you were able to vastly improve the productivity of the land.
Hmm.
Prior to that, the absentee owners, none of which seemed to want to own cattle, and all of whom were afraid that the renters would abuse the land. And so they had established a procedure that the renters could put one animal on 4 acres from April to October.
Mm-hmm.
That was too long a period, and K-State had figured out if you shortened the period and doubled the number of cattle for half the time, the productivity would be vastly increased. And once I read those studies that K-State had done, I realized there was no better place to be in the ranching business anywhere in the United States than in the Flint Hills of Kansas.
Wow. So this was a little controversial at the time, Bill, this idea of double stocking your land is what it's called with cattle, you know, grazing more cattle over shorter periods than was the practice down there. Why was it so controversial? Your neighbors didn't like what you decided to do.
You know, they really didn't. And it was because this practice had been established of one animal to 4 acres for a 6-month period of time. And as that evolved, the renters of the land thought, well, if I can only put one animal to 4 acres, I'll put very large cattle on, say 900 pounds. That was a defensive thing by the landowners, generations away from being in the cattle business themselves. And the K-State work opened my eyes to the fact that you could do it so much more efficiently, rely on the contract cowboy culture there in the Flint Hills,
mm-hmm.
and operate a very successful cattle business.
Well, this was so controversial that for a while you actually carried a gun with you because you were getting so many comments about what you were doing. Were you that concerned?
You know, I was that concerned, and although I did buy a pistol and got a permit to carry it, I never could quite bring myself to actually carry it. So I was defensive enough about changing the conventional practice that had been in place for years, that I felt a little bit threatened, but I never to the point that I actually carried a weapon with me.
You mentioned the contract cowboys who worked your land for so many years. What are contract cowboys? And you say they formed a wonderful culture. Describe it to us.
You know, it is a wonderful culture, and American males seem to be fascinated with the idea of being cowboys. And there's a multi-generational group of people in the Flint Hills who, for a fairly nominal fee, agree to work on a contract basis only for, in my case, 3 months out of the year. So it's very economical for me, and it gives me access to this wonderful culture of people who are totally dedicated to the idea of being cowboys and caring for the land and the cattle.
The first year you had cattle, you rode with the contract cowboys. What did you learn from them, Bill?
I learned that they knew a hell of a lot of stuff that I didn't know, and I was probably an impediment for being there. I think I only rode with them once or twice and realized I had one role to play in it, and they had another role to play, and I better stay out of their way.
But you clearly were enamored with them and what they do.
Yes, absolutely. Both the land and the cowboy culture that exists down in the Flint Hills.
You know, one of the struggles with the Flint Hills, it seems to me, Bill, is that, you know, the public, generally speaking, doesn't have a lot of access to it. I mean, there's some, to be sure, in different parts of the Flint Hills. But is that an issue when it comes to, you know, the way Kansans can appreciate what we have here?
You know, it kind of is an issue, but on the other hand, it helps keep the Flint Hills pristine. And I'm disappointed that more people haven't done what I've done in applying the conservation easements to perpetuity. But on the other hand, it's probably a good thing that we don't have that many people on county roads sightseeing. I will say, though, that it's kind of heartwarming how many people I see driving by my house on a county road, house in the Flint Hills. And frequently they'll stop if I'm on the road there and want to visit about it. And all of them seem to be so genuinely gratified to be able to drive through and experience the Flint Hills.
I was going to say, if our listeners haven't had a chance to do it in a while, it's a really nice way to spend a day down there. You know, the Wichita Eagle just did a long story on you, and reporter Kerry Rangers described you this way, Bill. Spend a minute talking to Bill Hall, and much more comes across. A caring yet unsentimental guy, the kind you likely wouldn't want to cross in business, who naturally peppers what he says with the kinds of words you don't say around your mother. Does that sound like an accurate description?
Well, embarrassingly true.
Why wouldn't I want to cross you in business, Bill?
I don't think that's the case. You know, I've made it a practice in my career to always deal with people on a humane basis, limit the amount of contact with lawyers or others on that. So I think maybe that part of it might have been a little tiny bit unfair to me.
You know, one of your goals, and you've been pretty upfront about this, is to be both profitable and to make the world a better place.
I think you can learn at doing the right thing no matter what we're doing, and that's not necessarily contradictory with doing it successfully.
Tell me how much you do appreciate the land. How much time do you spend just sort of gazing out from your property? And do you have time just to sort of take it in?
You know, yes, I do. Not a lot of time, but some. And let me give you a couple of examples. The Bass family in Fort Worth, the multi-billionaire Bass family.
Right.
bought a controlling interest of the company that I publicly held company that I was running then, and I became friends with them. They became fascinated with what I was doing individually in the Flint Hills, and two examples I think are very compelling. Lee Bass and I had partnered on leasing what's now the Tallgrass Prairie National Preserve, and we were standing on my main ranch, and he was talking about helping him acquire land in the Flint Hills. And his comment was, Bill, do you mean to tell me we can make the kind of money that you and I made leasing land this year? We can buy it for this incredibly low price, and they'll throw all this scenery in for free. And it seems like a light statement, but it was a very sincere statement, I think. The other example was Ed Bass and I were sitting on my ranch house in the Flint Hills porch, and I was pontificating about the specifics of the profitability of the operation, and Ed punched me in the shoulder, and he said, Bill, this is priceless. So I think those are two great examples of some very intelligent, very successful people who recognize not only the business-like aspect of operating the ranches the way we do, but also the fact that the scenery and the experience of being there overwhelms the business aspect.
How often do you get down there?
Historically, I've spent a few days a week there, sometimes including more weekends than my wife thinks is appropriate. but lately, this year, for the first time in 30 years, I'm leasing land to others, and I'm not spending nearly as much time there.
What do you do when you're down there?
Well, you know, there's an old saying that says the most important thing on any ranch is the owner's shadow. And I think that's a very valid observation. So I observe what's going on. I make sure that the things that are happening there are the way I want them to be happening, and that there's nothing happening that's not the way I want it to be.
One of your goals has been focused on bucking up Cottonwood Falls, the nearby town that is so much fun to visit. What have you done there? And I'm also wondering what your concerns are about sort of the fate and the future of small town Kansas.
Well, that's a great question. And it is one of the most beautiful small towns. Matter of fact, it was recently named one of the five, I think, most beautiful tiny towns in America. Starting shortly after I bought my Flint Hills ranches, I bought, I think, a total of 8 buildings in what was a dilapidated downtown. Spent a great deal of money restoring them. Have sold all but one of them. And there's a wonderful hotel in one of them now. There's a school district headquarters in one of them. One's a Western store. Unfortunately, though, my experience is that I am pretty lucky to sell them after developing them for a fourth of what I've got in them. And that's sad for the, I don't know what the future of small towns is. Maybe it will be better now with a lot of remote working by computers. But small town America is always struggling.
Yeah, I like to tool around out there sometimes on the weekends, you know, in Flint Hills and even west a little bit. I'm always struck when I drive through those towns, boy, one after another, in so many cases, Bill, there's just not a whole lot left.
You know, that's sad, but very true. And Certainly the 8 buildings that I bought in Cottonwood Falls were falling down and dilapidated, and now they're very attractive buildings, but probably not very many successful businesses operating in them.
Yeah. Your plan now is to focus on the West Bottoms. You own the Livestock Exchange building there. A lot of people know that. Just any thoughts on what you'd like to see happen down there?
Well, we've got a lot happening now. First of all, I want to correct you. The West Bottoms, in my mind, is the area north of 670.
Okay.
I bought 24 acres, maybe it was more than 24 acres, south of 670, because I had learned in graduate school that, to show you how old I am, the interstate highways were a new phenomenon. And every course I took emphasized that the greatest real estate value in the United States would be access ramps to the interstate highways. So I bought the old abandoned stockyards, and then we've brought a number of successful businesses here. We restored the Livestock Exchange building, which is a wonderful old building
that
we restored to look the way it did originally. Butler Manufacturing moved their world headquarters here. The state of Missouri unemployment division, Mark One Electric. We've got a new Flaherty and Collins apartment project adjacent to the Livestock Exchange building that's leasing up far beyond their expectations. We've done a lot of development already. We've got a lot to come. Flaherty and Collins is building another 240-unit, I think, apartment building along the river on land that I own there. So, again, remember, it's not called south of 670. It's called the Stockyards District,
mm-hmm.
not the West Bottoms.
What do you think the future for the Stockyards District can be, Bill? What do you see?
We, fortunately, I own enough of the land that I can control what it's going to be. It will be first-class residential and business development. The Rock Island Bridge, railroad bridge, is being redeveloped, not by me, but by another developer, as an entertainment facility and a trail crossing for the access roads along the Kansas River, much like the Katy Trail, actually, on the Missouri River. So this is becoming already a very upscale business and residential area, and I want to see that continue.
I was going to say, Kansas City has been so removed from its water for so many years, the Missouri and the Kansas rivers, and you see that changing, it sounds like.
Well, I think it will, and I think there's a lot of support. Most people don't realize the land, 17 acres, I think, that I still own along the Kansas River, on this side of the river, the Kansas River, believe it or not, it's in Kansas. I think that's one reason Flaherty and Collins is going to build their second big apartment project on the along the river, is that some people would rather live in Kansas, some people would rather live in Missouri, and you can do it either way on either side of the state line road.
Yeah. So have you done pretty much what you've wanted to do in this lifetime, Bill? Is there something else that you would like to take a shot at, or have you sort of done it?
I don't think I've done it all yet. There's still a lot of development to be done here in the Stockyards District, and that's where my focus is going to be for the rest of my life. I'm 82 years old. It means I've probably got at least 30 years left, and I'll concentrate on the Stockyards District during that time.
Yeah. Well, that's Bill Hall Sr., who's made the big decision to sell his land in the Flint Hills. He's going to keep it in perpetual conservation easements to keep it the way it is for generations to come. Bill, what a pleasure to have you with us today. Thanks for taking the time.
Steve, it's been my pleasure. Let me add one more thing.
Yes, sir.
I failed to mention that my son, who spent much of his career with Amazon in Japan,
right,
came back about 10 years ago to work with me and bought the John O'Brien Gallery just a half a block away. And
he's yep.
made a spectacular success of that business called Hawk Contemporary.
Well, I love that place, and I was just down there last Friday evening for the opening with Lisa Grossman, someone I think you and I both admire.
Sure.
Great artist, yeah.
And we had a great visit there during that opening.
Bill, thanks again. Much appreciated.
Thank you, Steve. Bye.
Pursuing the light of my high-riding egos, I burned up my childhood days. I learned all the rules of a modern-day drifter. Don't you hold on.